shop for older people, adults with disabilities, and their families. Call 262-605-6646.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist with the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside, and Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Welcome to Community Matters. I'm your host today, Jane Herring. The Hospice Alliance provides care to patients and their families in Kenosha, Racine, and Walworth counties. Today, we will be talking about the organization and its services with Rita Hagen, Executive Director, Beth Dillon, who is the volunteer manager, and Jenny Sitkowski, the bereavement coordinator. I'm so glad that you were able to join us today, and we hope to learn more about the Hospice Alliance. And Rita, why don't we begin with you as executive director? What really encompasses all of the services that the Hospice Alliance provides?
Hospice care is obviously part of the Medicare benefit, and it provides end-of-life care. So by regulation, they'll say if someone has an anticipated life expectancy of 6 months or less and cure isn't an option, then hospice care focuses to symptom management and quality of life. And we do this by using an interdisciplinary team of professionals. And they're trained to address the physical, psychosocial, and spiritual needs of our patients and our families, because that team is there not just for the patient, but they support the family member throughout that journey and then beyond after the person has passed with our bereavement program. It's person-centered care. We look at goals for end of life and help the patients and the families to meet those. And we provide that care really wherever the patient calls home. So in their own personal residence, in an assisted living, and in a senior apartment, in a regular apartment, or in our hospice house. So we really, another unique thing, I guess, about hospice is we bring the care to the patient. You know, a lot of times you have to always go to the doctor, go to the hospital, go to the office, but we bring hospice to you and we provide that care, as I said, wherever you call home.
I think, Rita, you know, it's interesting because I can vaguely remember all the work that went into creating Hospice House, and you have been so successful with that many people think Hospice House is all you have. And you mentioned going out to the home. So do you have staff or do you contract with staff who go out to the house? How does that work?
We, all our staff is employed. We have no contracted staff. And the team consists of an RN case manager, a social worker, a CNA, and our spiritual care counselor. And they're assigned to a team of patients. And then our hospice house, they have a separate staff of made up of a nurse and an aide that provides around the care, clock care. That is, in the hospice house, you get 24-hour care because hospice isn't 24-hour care. We're just added another layer of support when we're in the home. But we will help you find care if you need it in your home. But yeah, our staff is all employed by us. And I always say it's neighbors taking care of neighbors. They live and work in the communities that they serve.
You know, your care, I think, has such a great reputation. And you had mentioned earlier about the 6 month life expectancy. I know it's pretty darn, from personal experience with family, pretty hard to get a physician to say what a life expectancy might be, because obviously that's you're guessing there. How does that work? Do they Do they just...
It's really is. I mean, none of us, you know, have that magic ball that know that. And it doesn't mean that if you're still alive in 7 months, you're done with hospice. It doesn't work like that. It's just that you have a generalized idea. You're maybe tired in your treatments. You've seen a decline over several months. But it really, we tell patients and their families all the time, just call us. You don't have to think about anything. If you notice a decline in yourself, if you notice that you're sleeping more than you're awake, that you're not eating as much, that you just, you know, don't have the same abilities that you did, call hospice. We come out, we meet with you and your family, and then we will contact the physician and we will make that determination on if you meet the criteria for hospice or not. And if you wouldn't, then we have palliative care as an option, because palliative care is very, very similar to hospice, but it allows you to continue to really follow treatment and curative care. So if you're diagnosed with, and it's not just a cancer, but end stage renal disease, you know, CHF, COPD, some of the, you know, severe emphysemas. Those are other things that we want to work with you on giving you quality of life. I mean, have you been admitted to the hospital twice in the last year? Then give us a call, because what we try to do is we're like that intermediary and we'll work with your primary care physician and kind of help you advocate your journey on what you want, whether that's 10 years left, whatever it is, what you want it to look like, and avoid hospitalizations, because we know quality of life is better when we're at home.
I think that that's one thing that I had heard about hospice care is it becomes, in order to accept hospice care under insurance, you then no longer can go to the hospital. Is that true, or it's a little confusing?
The idea behind hospice is a philosophy of care is to give you quality of life. And if you're in hospice care for a certain diagnosis and something comes up that you need, you know, something else done, I mean, it's not like you never go to the hospital, but we do talk to you about that and say, is that what you want? You know, we have many people who still end up going to the hospital, and then we go to the hospital with them and we talk to them about do you want to be treated? That's okay too. Otherwise, we're going to keep you comfortable and keep you at home. You know, there's a difference in comfort care, symptom management, and acute care, you know, aggressive treatment. And hospice care is not about aggressive treatments.
I think what I'm hearing from you too, in addition to the quality of care and the type of care, I think you also help patients demystify all of the care options, because I think a lot of it, you know, when you're at that point, you're not in a good place, and trying to make decisions when you've never really imagined you'd have to, it sounds like you're really there to walk people through the options.
That's exactly it. And our team does an amazing job of that, of helping them understand, you know what I mean, what will be expected on that journey towards end of life, answer their questions, help comfort their fears, their concerns, and really to help bring them to a beautiful and dignified end of life.
Before we move on to some of the other services and involvements that Hospice Alliance has, I do want to talk a bit more about Hospice House. When I visited a friend there a number of years ago, I just was so impressed with what a home-like atmosphere it was. But please, if you can describe what it looks like, what it feels like, and how family and friends can interact with patients who do come to the house.
Well, first of all, our hospice house is for those that we believe are nearing end of life. We usually say weeks to days to near end of life. And the reason for that is because when someone's at home, perhaps their children all live out of town and the spouse is elderly, or they don't have a surviving spouse. it allows them, you know, if it's too much in their own home, we can bring them into the hospice house. If they live in an assisted living or a nursing home, they have 24-hour care. But when you're in your private home, you don't. So we bring in people that, you know, need the help and are at end of life. It really is a home-like atmosphere. They have their own room. I mean, obviously things look a little different in COVID. We don't have as much, you know, hanging out in the kitchen and in the other little areas, but we've allowed two visitors per patient throughout COVID because we know how very important that is for people not to be alone. And, you know, it allows people to really just be the daughter, or just be the wife or whatever, without some of those burdens of caregiving.
I can see where that is especially helpful because every last precious moment is indeed that precious. Mm-hmm. Let's take a switch now to talk about some of the other involvements and services and commitments. And I'd like to bring Beth into the conversation because I understand she oversees a lot of the commitment to veterans. Beth, can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. So Hospice Alliance cares for about 100 veterans each year. And we joined an organization called We Honor Veterans to help our staff and volunteers better understand the unique needs that veterans can face at end of life. Sometimes the veterans, you know, unique needs are related to what they experienced during their military service. So joining this program helped, you know, teach our staff and volunteers how to, you know, make the environment safe for our veterans and affirm their feelings and just provide extra support to them when they need it. We also have a volunteer program, and 6 of our volunteers are veterans. And so when we have a veteran at end of life that might need extra support, we often can match them with one of our veteran volunteers, and they can have some just conversation and a safe place to share some of their experiences with a fellow veteran.
Talk to me a little bit about that, if you don't mind, Beth. I don't know how much you've been able to be in on any of those conversations or talk to your volunteers, but you know, what are some of the differences between some veterans and your average patient?
Right. So some veterans, you know, can have some PTSD that they have, you know, still are facing at end of life. They can also, you know, be more isolated, some anxiety, even anger based on some experiences that they may have had in the military. So that's a little different from some other, you know, needs that other patients might have.
That makes sense. And needing to resolve some of that before end of life would be important. Yeah.
I can share a quick example. One of our social workers once told me she had a patient that said that he never really talked about the things he experienced in his service. A lot of times veterans don't feel safe talking to their fellow, you know, family members or friends if they didn't have, you know, military experience. So in those cases, I can match them with that veteran volunteer, and they just feel safer talking to someone that also experienced things like that.
That makes sense. I know I had an uncle who we didn't find out until he was just about, you know, passed away, that he had been in some of the troops who liberated concentration camps, and he couldn't talk about it. It was just too horrific, and he didn't want to bring that home. So I think I know what you're talking about.
Right. And this particular patient told the social worker he's never really talked about it. And he just wanted to talk to someone about it before he died to kind of release that and, you know, have that discussion.
It makes sense and helps, you know, relieve some of that anxiety as they reach end of life. You also have some commitments to Heroes Cafe, and now sponsoring a cafe at Gooseberries, which is pretty exciting. What can you talk to me about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of our commitments is to, you know, recognize veterans in our communities. And so we started with Gooseberries in Burlington, a veteran cafe, and we meet on the second Thursday of each month from 8 to 10 a.m. And we invite all area military veterans to come join us. Gooseberries provides coffee and donuts. And then we provide some music. We do some singing with the veterans, the national anthem and different songs, and just conversation and a chance for the veterans to really get together and just have some camaraderie and share their experiences as well. So that's, you know, a really wonderful thing for the veterans out in the county. And then in Kenosha, Festival Foods hosts a Heroes Cafe on the south side. Festival Foods, they host it every Friday morning. And on the north side, Festival Foods, they host on Wednesdays. And Hospice Alliance volunteers at these cafes frequently. We're actually there every Friday in March. And so we just go and we help, you know, serve coffee and donuts and just talk around or walk around and talk to the veterans and thank them for their service and listen to their stories. And, you know, both of those settings, just a really nice chance for the veterans to get together and again, share that companionship.
And I don't know if winter weather makes a difference, but in general, what kind of turnout do you get at these locations? I'm sure it varies.
Yeah, Gooseberries, when we first started, we had about 25 veterans. It has declined just a little bit, maybe the winter weather, but we had about 10 last cafe. So, you know, it kind of varies. And we're still working to get the word out about Gooseberries because we just started it a few months ago. So we're still working to build that. The Heroes Cafe gets, that's been in existence, I think, 8 years. And so the Friday morning one, they have about 60 to 70 veterans each week.
That's terrific and much larger than I would have expected. Even the 2025 at Gooseberries when you first began is pretty sensational. But yeah, I know in winter and especially more out in the county, I can see where it would decline for in the short term. And I had not, you hear about the Heroes Cafe because it gets some newspaper coverage or people go in the grocery store and wonder what the heck is going on up there. But Gooseberries is a little bit further away from the city, but hopefully maybe this interview will help get the word out a little bit.
Yeah, and definitely we started Gooseberries because there wasn't something like that out in the county. And so we really wanted to provide that to veterans, you know, out in the county.
So Rita, when you first began talking, you've talked about how really person-centered your care is. And that means for both the patient and the family. And eventually the end comes, but your services don't really end there. And I'm hoping that we can learn a little bit more about from Jenny about some of the bereavement services that you might provide for family members.
Yes. Another unique thing about hospice care, the Medicare benefit, is that it does include bereavement for give bereavement care and support to the family for the entire year following the patient's death. And so, but they don't tell you how that needs to be done. And Hospice Alliance knows how important that time is. And we devote a lot of time and different things to that because we know how important it is to the family. And Jenny's role is she oversees all of that. She is our bereavement coordinator. So I'll let her tell a little bit about that.
hi. So, yes, I am the bereavement coordinator here. And what we do is, you know, really I rely on a lot of information from the team who cared for each specific patient and their family. So each week I talk to the nurse case manager and the social worker and the chaplain. And I get an idea and I read all of the reports and the social histories to find out for each patient, you know, what it looks like we can kind of anticipate for their bereavement needs. And then the team tells me when they kind of think that it would be a good idea to give people a call, and then we do lots of mailings for people too. So we really want to do things the way that families want us to do it. We want them to determine what level of support we give. You know, many people love to get periodic phone calls throughout the year and just sort of talk about how they're doing, their experience. Sometimes people reminisce. Sometimes they're very difficult situations. Sometimes they're, you know, really challenging, and sometimes people are having a very difficult time with their grief and are looking for some tools to learn how to manage things that they run into. And so we're there for that. And then we do quarterly mailings too, which are really nice, and people tend to appreciate those because our mailings are filled with just these little articles that don't take a lot of time or commitment to read. And they're kind of filled with a lot of nice information that validates the way that people feel and normalizes grief, because that's really our main goal, is to sort of normalize this whole experience for people and to assist in that. And then we do grief support groups throughout the year as well. So those consist of 6 sessions, and they go for 6 weeks in a row. They run about 1.5 to 2 hours. We're in the middle of one right now, so we just finished the 4th and we have 2 left. Then we'll start them again in a month. Those are just a great opportunity for people to get together and understand each other's stories and really look for support. We always let them know that it's not therapy, it's not group therapy. What we do is not therapy, but it's support. I typically facilitate that, and we go from there. We top them off at about 10 people. Sometimes we have more people, sometimes we have less. It's always good though. It's when there's a small group, it's very intimate. When there's a bigger group, there is more to share and more to hear about. So people tend to appreciate them and like them. And then sometimes people aren't ready for a group and they share that they don't really, want to do that at, you know, whatever particular time on their journey. And so they don't. And so maybe we meet with them one-on-one. So we do that as well. We also meet with people in the community who did not have hospice services. So we get a good number of people who call, or maybe their nurse calls from the hospital or whomever is looking for a little support, and they'll call, and we see people from our community as well. And we get that going, and then we encourage group participation. So that's helpful for people. And then we also started a children's program, which has been really successful so far. That meets monthly. And that is for little kids all the way up to teenagers. So that's been going really well too. So we're trying to kind of fill in some spots that needed support in the community. And, so far so good. It's, we have about each week, probably we make about 50 or so phone calls to people to check in. We do visits. People come here, visit with us one-on-one. And we focus a lot on grief education, what we've learned in the last few decades. People have become a lot more realistic about grief and kind of how it seems to work with people. So that's what we're about.
Yeah, that's a fabulous overview. And let me just ask a couple of questions that popped up while I was listening to you. And that's, you mentioned 50 phone calls. I don't know how to say this politically correct, but I'm going to do it anyway. You're calling for a specific reason and you're asking how they're doing, and that's wonderful. But I bet you get a lot of questions or concerns that have nothing to do with how to cope with grief, and more some of those bigger financial questions or whatever. Are your either volunteers or staff doing that? How do they How do they handle those kinds of calls?
So typically when people start talking about, you know, their grief experience and what they're dealing with, you're right. You know, when somebody dies, that's a natural part of the experience and the healing process, is that a lot of other things come up. That people have experienced in life, sometimes family dynamics, sometimes great things, sometimes really difficult and unhealthy things. And they do come up, and that's a natural part of the conversation. And so, you know, sometimes people just want to talk. And that's a huge part of any kind of bereavement and any kind of grief support, is just being present to listen, because there's not, you know, grief is normal. It's not pathological. And so, you know, you're not there to fix something. You know, we're there to support and to listen. And, but when people are really looking for some solutions or they need further assistance with things, and we're always happy to provide referrals to, you know, community services that are out there. And people do ask financial questions and things like that, which of course is totally outside of my scope. So, you know, we refer them to someone who would be able to help them. And then, you know, as things get into more of a deeper sort of something where someone needs some therapy, that kind of a thing, then we simply refer to them as well. Yeah.
No, that makes sense. And you also then talked about the Connections program, and you mentioned that that's relatively new, but well received. How did you come about realizing that that young children was an unmet need?
Well, Rita actually was wanting to do a children's program for quite some time. And so we realized that there's just kind of a gap in the community. And, you know, I think Rita saw it as an opportunity for us to kind of be a solution to meet that need. And if you look around sort of for children's services in general, things can be a little hard to find, especially in this area. You know, we're between two major metropolitan areas. And so what do we have right here? You know, sometimes people don't want to drive to Milwaukee. They don't want to drive to Chicago area. And so, you know, what can we have that's available here? So it's, you know, we saw the need and then crafted this program with a lot of help from a lot of other people and agencies and volunteers. And so we're doing our best to meet it.
Excellent. I'm going to back off from talking about volunteer needs and talk to Rita a little bit more about funding. Any number of times you've mentioned things covered by a Medicare benefit. And then there are things that are not covered by a Medicare benefit that you provide. Tell me a little bit about that dividing line and what funds those things not covered by Medicare.
Well, the Medicare benefit, how it is paid is it's a per diem. So from days 1 through 60, you get one amount per day. And then from days 61 till end of life, you get another, a different amount, which is usually a little less because they figure the most amount of work is kind of done in those first 60 days. And that covers all medical equipment, all medications that are related to the end of life, the nurse visits, our CNA visits, our social worker visits, all those things in that per diem that we get per patient. But for Hospice Alliance, what's really important is not all just that work, but we, you know, what we call is our complementary therapies, and that's our music therapy, our aromatherapy, all these great things that Jenny talked about. That isn't even just for our patients or the families of our patients. We have, especially in our Connections program, many families that never had somebody on service. You know, we do a lot of community outreach because we know how important that is. And so those are the end extra things. We've just started with a life enrichment coordinator who goes into facilities and, you know, to do activities and get patients involved. But it's not just our hospice patients. If there's other patients there in a say an activity area, she works with all of them. Those are the things that are a part of our mission that we know adds life to days, that gives people better quality at end of life, brings them joy, what, you know, all those things. And that is where things like fundraising are important, because those are the things that we pay for, and they're not covered by the benefit, but we know that they're essential to end of life care. And so, for instance, we have our Evening of Wishes, which is coming up. That is really our only one big fundraiser that we hold every year. It is Saturday, March 5th out at Strawberry Creek. And the funds that are used from that, that is what we have available to help us provide life enrichment coordinators, aromatherapists, you know, music therapists, certainly our Connections program, you know, the startup of it and now the continuation of it. When we have that, we serve a light dinner like a pizza and a salad, and we bring everyone together for a meal, you know, but that's because we know that's important for that bonding and to get people to get to know each other and feel comfortable, you know, whenever you share a meal, that is. So we do so much, and that's why something like Evening of Wishes is so important to us. You know, throughout the year, we do little dining for donations or carry out for contributions that we would ask people to support, because we get a percentage from those. But that's really helps us support our mission. And I think the other thing that I haven't really brought up about Hospice Alliance is we never turn away a patient because they can't pay. So, you know, we talk a lot about the Medicare benefit, but if someone is unemployed and they're not Medicare age, then they need hospice care, we take care of them. We're the hospice that other hospices call when they have patients who don't have money. Because that is our mission. We live our mission. And our hospice house, you know, nobody covers room and board. Medicare doesn't pay room and board anywhere, not in an assisted living, not in a nursing home. You know, that all is private pay. Medicare doesn't cover that. And so our hospice house is no different. But even that, we charge, you know, a lower rate than anywhere else in the state, because we know how important it is. And if people have hardship, then we make sure that we still can get them in there. And our fundraising helps support that. The kindness, the donations that people give us, really, it's important. But we use that money to make the life of our patients and our families better.
Totally makes sense. And you had, you'd mentioned the Evening of Wishes, and it is coming up awfully quickly. I noticed on the website, it sounded like there was a deadline. Are we past the deadline for purchasing tickets, or will you still sell some tickets?
We can take tickets up until the close of business on Monday, because we have to get a count to Strawberry Creek on Tuesday. So please, and certainly I can understand people's hesitancy because of all we're going through right now, but we've had good news in the last couple of weeks that COVID cases have dropped dramatically. Those are the words from our person overseeing our health department, Jennifer Freiheit. So that's a good thing. We have lots of space there. We'll follow COVID precautions to keep everybody safe. So please come for, it's just a nice, simple night. Have a few drinks, a nice dinner, learn a little bit more about hospice, some fun silent auction and live auction items, and support your community.
And needless to say, you want to have people there and enjoying such a nice evening and enjoying their friends. But if they can't go on March 5th, you do, of course, accept donations in lieu of.
Yes, we do. We always accept donations.
How did I know that?
I know. HospiceAlliance.org/wishes. That's where you can go to learn about our Evening of Wishes. But then there's a little button right there that says, I'd like to donate. And even when it's not Evening of Wishes, that button for donating is there, or mail us a check. And it goes right into our foundation so that we can, again, continue to support people. You know, we've been here 40 years and we hope to be here 40 years more. And it's really from the generosity of all of our donors and families that we'll be able to do that.
We still have about 5 minutes left. And I'm curious about when I hear about all the different services that are being offered and just things to maintain day-to-day services within the house itself. It sounds like it is a combination of paid staff, and you've mentioned volunteers a couple of times. Each of you being interviewed have mentioned that. Can you tell me where that line is? And most importantly, how would you use community volunteers?
I'll have Beth address most of that, but one unique thing again about hospice is that it's really the only, healthcare program that requires, and I believe it's 5%, Beth, of our overall patient care hours should be provided by volunteers. And I think that goes back to our grassroots of hospice, where, you know, community members realized there was a need and started up volunteer hospice programs long before the actual benefit. But Beth can certainly give you an overview far better than I on all the amazing things our volunteers do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're very fortunate and thankful to have a great group of volunteers that help support our mission. We have volunteers that come in almost every day in the hospice house, and they help support the staff in the hospice house by making meals for the patients at mealtime. They'll bring it into the patient and also just sit with them. If they don't have family visiting, the volunteers will sit with the patients and keep them company, have conversation. We have volunteers that go out to a patient's home. If a family member is taking care of their loved one and that family member needs to go out and run some errands, but just doesn't want that patient to be alone, we can have a volunteer go sit with that patient. And that gives such good peace of mind to that family member to know that someone is with their loved one. We also do companionship visits wherever we have patients. It could be at a nursing home, an assisted living, their own home. Volunteers can go in once a week for 1 to 2 hours and just have some companionship time with the patient, keep them company, have conversation, play cards, but whatever they'd like to do. So it's just a wonderful support to provide to the patients and the families to have volunteers.
I don't mean to put you on the spot, but can you give me a kind of a ballpark figure as to how many people do volunteer with you?
Yeah, absolutely. Right now we have about 90 volunteers with us, and it's very flexible. So volunteers can be active or not active throughout the year. So, you know, active right now, I probably have about 50 volunteers that are doing things for us. We also have a lot of volunteers that come into the office and help support our staff in the office. So, you know, our volunteers can see patients or volunteer in the office. They also volunteer at community events throughout the year. So there's a lot of different opportunity for volunteers.
We have pet therapists too, right, Jen?
Yep,
Sorry.
That's okay. We have 3 pet therapists right now. So they go out with their dogs and do pet therapy visits. I do also have 1 volunteer massage therapist, so she can see patients for us. And so that's just a wonderful extra service as well.
That's for sure. So Rita, from a staff standpoint, how many staff people do you employ?
We employ totally about, I believe we're at like 95 employees serving. That's both the clinical field staff and then of course our office administrative staff. The majority of that is obviously the interdisciplinary team, the clinical staff. But yes, we have around 95, and you know, we serve Kenosha and Racine and Walworth counties.
Okay, and that is a question I'm embarrassed that I missed. I think of you as Kenosha because you're in Pleasant Prairie with the house, but you are considered the tri-county provider of hospice services?
We are. We've been providing hospice services for this 40 years to all those areas, just as we have in Kenosha here, and have served, like I said, both Racine and Walworth counties for that time, as well as Kenosha.
Okay. What's next? Do you plan to keep on building and coming back from COVID, trying to, hold steady?
help support those services? Do you have plans for growth?
Not specific plans for growth, but I, you know, part of our discussion, our strategic plan is looking at what are the needs. You know, healthcare and long-term care is changing. People want to age in place. What can we do to assist people to do that? And how can Hospice Alliance be a part of that? And so, you know, lots of things to think about, but to see really how can we meet those needs of people here. And I'm involved in several programs through the ADRC, our care transitions and the Long-Term Care Alliance, where we're really trying to look at the future healthcare needs of people in our communities.
Thank you so much for being my guest today and helping the community better understand the care options the Hospice Alliance provides, as well as community services from which they or their friends and family might benefit. We've been talking today with Rita Hagen, Executive Director of Hospice Alliance, Beth Dillon, Volunteer Manager, and Jenny Sitkowski, the Bereavement Coordinator. And I'm Jane Herring. Thanks for joining me today on Community Matters.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Support comes from the Carthage College Business and Professional Coalition. Delighted to welcome Rosario Marin, former Treasurer of the United States. You're invited to join the coalition Wednesday, February 23rd at 6 p.m. for a discussion on the future of U.S. and Latin American economic relations, in particular the challenges and opportunities in the relationship between Mexico and the United States. The event is free and open to the public. Learn more at carthage.edu/businesscoalition.
Taking us out, Duke Ellington's arrangement of Take the A-Train, music by Billy Strayhorn, a performance with Joanne Folletta conducting the Buffalo Philharmonic, a request from Cheryl in Green Bay, who said, it's not exactly classical music, but for sure it's a classic, which it is. And apparently this was featured on the midday program this past Monday with Norman Gilliland. I'm Ruth Ann Bestman. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for your requests. Have a good, safe weekend. Get your requests in early online is the best way, WPR.org. And thank you to all who donated during our winter member drive. Thank you so much for your support and for being part of Classics by Request in our 42nd year. It's all due to your support. Thank you so much. Coming up, we have the Metropolitan Opera, and I'll be back around 2:30 for Saturday Afternoon Classics here on Wisconsin Public Radio.
WPR plays a vital role in our community, providing essential news, inspiring music, and telling the stories of Wisconsinites. You can play a vital role for WPR when you include WPR in your philanthropic giving. Your generous gift at WPR.org/donate keeps Wisconsin informed and connected. Thank you for ensuring that Wisconsin has high-quality public radio available to all.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board and the University of Wisconsin-Madison, with additional financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners through the Wisconsin Public Radio Association.
You're listening to WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, your gateway to public radio.